We mentioned that among the strongest opposition of those that opposed Ramchal were the Rabbonim of Venice themselves. And the Rabbonim of Venice decided actually to come and to pay a visit to the Ramchal. So I'd like to investigate what he's all about and to see if there's anything about the negative rumors against him. Namely that the Ramchal, who claims to have been zeichet to all these various madregas and his tremendous knowledge in Kabbalah, that is something which is not to be suspected, because this was after the era of the Shabbosai Tzvi era. Ramchal's Rebbe, Reb Shai Boson, one of the Gedoy Lador, he anticipated, he had heard that Ramchal is going to be paid a visit by the Rabbonim of Venice. So he sort of like warned them, and he said, what I'm afraid is that they're going to come to you and they're going to be geyser, and they will confiscate all your manuscripts, everything that you had written, and they will force you to give it to them, and they'll make a bir chametz with that. So as a result, so the Bishai Basan advised Ramchal, and he says, my advice is that you hand over to me, to all your writings that you have, and once it's in my possession, he says, it'll be safe. Because the Rabbonim of Venice, as influential as they are, they would not take on Reb Shai Basan, who was one of the Ziknei Gedoy Lahador of the time. And Kachave, as he had predicted, when the Rabbonim of Venice, when they came to visit Ramchal, they were not really interested, really, in terms of finding justification for Ramchal, but they clearly with many, many accusations. And they forced Ramchal to sign a document in order to quiet down the machlokes, as we mentioned last week, to sign a document that he will no longer actually write any sforim with the Lashon of Hazayah. He will no longer record, and certainly not publish, he says, the teachings that he claims that he was taught by the Maggid, which is by a Malach and so on and so forth, and all these various neshamas. He will not write and continue to write a second Zohar HaKadosh. And Ramchal signed that document, and it was endorsed, in other words, notarized by the three Rabbonim of Venice. One was the name of Reb Nechemiah Chai, Ben Reb Yankev HaKoyim, he was one of the Rabbonim. The other was Reb Yankev Belolios, also one of the Rabbonim of Venice. And the other one was Reb Moshe Menachem Merori. And they basically, after the Ramchal wrote his, so to speak, his admission, writing his commitment, so they write the following lines, sort of like, in addition, as a hoisafe to what Ramchal wrote, that we sat here as a bezin b'moysef klosa kechoda havine, we were sitting here, we convened like a bezin of three, kadosa kadmano, who came before us, Reb Moshe Chaim Litzato ben Reb Yankev Chai, that was his father's name, Litzato, v'hiskim, and he was maskim, whatever we dictated to him, b'shvua chamura, b'koye cherem chomur, v'chosam shimoyin, he signed his name, l'rayas o'emes. And Merele, he says, Ishanuhu vikanuhu, we endorse it and we notarize his signature, as it is Poi Padua, was Yoim Beis, Shloisha L'Chodesh Menachemov, was Gimel Chodeshov, Shnas Tov Tzadik, which is the year 1730. And as mentioned over here, this was the signature of the three Rabbonin. As we mentioned, the Ramchal, when he signed the document, besides the fact that he was forced to sign it, and even though in the letter that he signed, the letter states, I'm signing it, he said, with my own free will, not under duress, but it was. In other words, that itself was being forced to write, that he's doing it out of his own rutz and doing it of his own volition, he's not being forced. There was no choice. There's any way to quiet down the machloikis, this is what the advice that his Rebbe gave him, this is what you have to do, and this is what he did. But he did write a caveat, he said, in there, sort of like, threw in a phrase, all of this is kol zman ha'im in chutz la'aretz, while I'm living here in Chutz La'aretz. Which means to say, but the moment that I go to Eretz Yisrael and I leave Chutz La'aretz, he says, so whatever was written over here certainly is not binding. It's not binding at all. One sees from here already that Ramchal already had early intentions actually to leave Italy and to go to Eretz Yisrael, which is actually that year itself, 1730, the year that he signed the document, he already put in Kozmanayim and Chutzlaritz, but not when I'm going to Eretz Yisrael. As a matter of fact, in his special letter that he wrote to his Rebbe, in that Kufa, he's Megala Das to his Rebbe, he reveals to his Rebbe that his intentions are, as a matter of fact, to leave and to go to be able to Eretz Yisrael. Lamaisa, amazing time, Shia Kodesh Baruch had different plans. His plans did not materialize until 13 years later. He realized this is now 1730. He was not Oyla Eretz Yisrael until 1743. So that's 13 years later. And we also see that everything that his rabbi that he forced him all that to write that, we see that even his rabbi's opinion was, what you're doing it, you have no choice, but deep down he really did not really feel any serious commitment to that, in the sense is because his rabbi himself, when it came to Kabbalah, his rabbi in Teres Anigla, but any shaylos in Kabbalah, his rabbi Abishai Busan would pass on to Ramchal, ask all the shaylos to Ramchal. And Ramchal would answer all the questions that his rabbi asked him. And these things are all recorded in letters. By the way, there's a number of volumes called Kisvei Ramchal. So besides all the many, many, many svarim that Ramchal wrote, there is so much more to be learned just simply from the letters. And the letter to Ramchal is questions coming from different Balam Mekubalim, much, much older than him. He was in his 20s, we're talking about now. Early 20s. And nevertheless, Zikti Baal Mekubalim, if any questions, they would write to him, and you'd find his answers, which is easily found, this is printed in the Kisvei Ramchal. We have a couple of volumes regarding that. And in the year 1731, so now his Rebbe comes over to him and says to him, you know what, Ramchal, it's time that you get married. Time to do a shidduch. He was 24 years old at the time. He was not married. And that was also one of the inyonim that the opposition had against him. He said, if you're really an El Chayit, if you're really a true Eved Hashem, how's it possible you're not married, not being Mekayim in the first mitzvah in the Torah? How are you just abandoning that mitzvah? How are you doing it? And the situation is because they did not understand the great madrega of the Ramchal, the Kedusha Ramchal. I mean, it's similar to the derech that you find in Chazal, like Ben Azai and Ben Zoyma. Ben Azai would say that what, that Nafshi Choshke B'Torah, and so on and so forth. So they, of course, did not understand that Shaykh, that in that generation, or in any generation in recent times, and certainly at that young age, you could have somebody in such a madrega that would justify giving any type of a heter for not getting married. But nevertheless, his Rebbe said, listen, if you want to quiet down the machlokes, then you can't be different than anybody else. Then in fact, then you have to get married. So Kachave, the age of 24, late enough, certainly for a big Baal Mekubal, you got to get married. So he did that also. He acceded. He was maskin to his Rebbe's request, gets married in order to remove any excuses from his misnagdim, from the opposition. And his Rebbe himself, Reb Shai Basan, was the Shadchan. And the shidduch was with the daughter of one of the great Baal Mekubalim, Reb David Finchi. Reb David Finchi was a Rav in Mantova. Rav is Rav in Mantova. Just to remind you, those that were with us in Mantova, that there you have, when finally we found the old Beis HaChaim, which again there's an army base on top of it, that you can't, it's Kavat Nashach to find it, but we found it, but you can't go inside because it's around with a big gate, but you know that that's where the old Beis HaChaim is, and you have like, that was the sign where you have, here's the cave of the Ramah Mepano, the great Baal Mekubal, and Rav Moshe Zakuto, and so on, and many, many other Gedol Yisrael over there. David Pinchy was, at that time, was the Rav of Mantova. And a matter of fact, Ramchal, when he heard about the Shidduch, he accepted the Shidduch from his Rebbe, because Rav David Pinchy happened to be one of his old Yedidim from before, not his Shver, who was to become his father-in-law, but one of his old Yedidim from before. He was one of the few that sided with him in the Machlokes. He was one of the few that actually sided with him. And Kaparim so finds that the Shidduch took place. Ramchal Taki gets married. The Chasana, all the Talmidim of the Ramchal's yeshiva, right in Padua. And one can imagine it was a great simcha. After the wedding, for a short period, Ramchal spends time next to Shver. He leaves Padua and he is in Mantova. But later, after a short while, he comes back with his family, with his wife actually, comes back to Padua. Ramchal had only one son, didn't have any more children. one son. Not too much is known about that son, but he only had one son. And a short while after Ramchal signed those documents for the Rabbonim of Venice, it becomes known all over. It becomes known all over that Ramchal signed with his Shvuah Becherem Gomer that he's not going to continue his ways. He's not going to write these kind of ksavim anymore. And he's going to refrain, he's going to abstain from publicizing all these teachings of Kabbalah and so on. So for a while, it calmed down. It calmed the storm for a while. And as a matter of fact, even when the great instigator was Rav Moshe Chagiz, you know, was one of the biggest instigators. Lamaisa, they became quiet for a while, became very, very happy. And there are letters, by the way, that Rav Moshe Chagiz is writing. Oh, I'm very, very happy that finally Ramchal committed himself that he's going to abstain, he's going to sit back quietly, and he's not going to continue on in his derech that he has been on, and so on and so forth. At the same time, though, great Rabbonim, who still were in contact with communication with Ramchal from before, right, through letter writing, correspondence, asking Ramchal all different questions in Kabbalah, that still continued, his correspondence with those, and so on and so forth. And matter of fact, it is said that Ramchal had now, after he signed this letter, the Magid, the Malach, that came to teach to Ramchal, actually came to him even more frequently, more frequently than before. And the Ramchal writes the reason that he was zeicher, that the Magid comes to him even more, because Shemayim wanted to be Menachem a little from all the tzaras that he's having. Being that he's having all those tzaras, he says, and he's innocent. But they did not understand the Ramchal, did not believe that he was innocent, so all of the tzaras, at least what's the shtickle and the chomer, that Shemayim sent the Magid even more. So he even had more revelation, more giluim from that Magid than he had even from before. So just one more small thing. In the 1731, a year later, after he signs that document, so there was a great gzeira decree from the Pope at the time. There's also another tekufa of Sreifas HaTalmud, of burning all the Talmud, all the Sifrei Kedusha and so on. And that was a terrible sorrow. You can imagine having to burn Talmud. And all the Gedolei Yisrael were trying, getting involved, trying, what can we do, something, try to be mevatel this, try to be mevatel this gzeira. And nonetheless, the Rebbe, the Ramchal himself, Rabbi Shaya Basson, he went and writes a letter to Ramchal that he should reveal to him, try to find out Min HaShemayim, what is the reason that this Gezerah is now coming upon Klal Yisrael, to have to undergo such a serious Gezerah, having to burn, but the Pope is Gezerah decreeing to burn all the Sreifas HaTalmud, to burn all of the Shasin and all of these Gemaras. So, what is the Koyach of the Sitra? Who gave the Satan this Koyach? What gave the Sitra Akhra a particular Koyach Neged HaTorah? And there is a letter, maybe one day, maybe we'll go through it a little bit, as much as we can understand, at least from it, from Chal, clearly answers his Rebbe in a letter to try to explain the whole Indian, what the Cheshbon was in Shemayim, why the Gezerah was coming at that particular time. Gezerah of Sreifas HaTalmud. And Ramchal goes further, he says, and I'll reveal you something else. This is what he writes to his Rebbe. I was aware and anticipated this coming, and that's why I tried to prepare the refuah before the Makkah. Tried to prepare the medicine, the healing before. Before the market, in the sense, what did I do? That's why I established in my yeshiva that the Seder of learning was, when they learned Kabbalah, that they had one who was learning non-stop. They're learning the Zoya non-stop, and the Seder was by rotation, that when one, it started, by the way, from Alois HaShachar, from dawn, straight until night time. B'li Hefzik, meaning that when a person stopped, there was somebody right immediately there to step in to continue where the first one left off. When the second stopped, for any reason he had to stop, then the third one, this went all by rotation. Ramchal said, this Seder of Zoya, Zoya Chodosh, a whole assignment of different material in Kabbalah, doing all types of tikkunim, I prepared this Seder my yeshiva that should serve as a refuah before the Makkah. And Ramchal writes to his Rebbe, it's clear to me, he said, by having this Seder, this will be a koyach to be mevatel the gzeirah. And it brings rise from the Zohar Kodesh from Shimon ben Yochai. Shimon ben Yochai says, ki kol zman shenishma divrei Torah, kol zman and divrei Torah is heard, b'li hefzik, non-stop, ein b'koyach shum gzeirah lovoi. There's no koyach of any gzeirah to come neged HaTorah. So Ramchal now advises his Rebbe, you do the same thing in your area. Ramchal was in Padua. Rabbi Shai Basson was in Regio. So my advice to you is that you also establish this type of a Seder where you are, and also see to be mashpia and other mekaymis that should also have this type of a Seder in different areas of Kabbalah. B'li hefzik, and Bez Hashem it will be mevatel the gzeirah. So this a little bit again of some of the goings on that Ramchal had to contend with. We go here further in the Sefer Derech Hashem of Ramchal. In the edition that you have is Daf Lamed Ches. Daf Lamed Ches. It's Ois Tes there. You'll see Ve'ulam. All right. Ve'ulam Uvad Kol Zeh. Ramchal now is basically trying to be Mazabri, is elaborating on the transformation of Odom Rishon due to his Avera. So Ramchal now is going to explain the transformation, the change that took place to Odom Rishon due to the Avera. The fact is that he was Choytei sinned with the Eitz Hadas. He goes on to say, V'ulam Muvad Kol Zeh. He says, besides all of this, besides all of this, meaning says, besides the fact which Ramchal mentioned above, that is, that due to the Avera, right, due to the sin of Odom Rishon, right, man has to work now even harder to reach perfection. I mean, his own potential, whatever his potential is, but due to the Avera of Odom Rishon, so man now has to work even harder to reach perfection, because now, due to the chet of Odom Rishon, there are added deficiencies. Whatever deficiencies that a human being has, but now due to the chet of Adam Rishon, now there are added deficiencies that he brought upon himself. And now what man has to do after the chet is to try to return to the state of Adam Rishon before the chet. So we can understand what a tremendous task that man has now before him after the chet of Adam. So Ramchal says, so in addition to all that, Gozro Midas Dina Yisborach Shemoi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midas Adin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Mid of Justice decreed the following. Which means to say that divine justice demands that there has to be a consequence, there has to be a consequence that results from the new situation to which man finds himself after the Avera. There has to be a consequence. So what was that consequence? The Machal says, the Gzeira was, Shlo Yuchlu, Lo Yo'odom, Lo Yo'oyla Meyato, that neither man nor the world can now arrive, Higi Al Ashlemus, Oidom, Bitsura, Shiniskalkova. Now that the chet of Adam Rishon took place, neither man nor the world can arrive at perfection while they are still in a corrupted form. Bitsurash in his kalkala. After the chet, man, not only man, the entire world has now been reduced, has been lowered. The whole level of Kedusha has been lowered. So now man and the world is now in a state of tsurash in his kalkala. They're now in a state of itsura, of a corrupted form. And therefore, let's stop for a moment. With Ramchal is therefore telling us, being that now we are in a corrupted form, right? It's not possible simply for man to work harder, to try to reach perfection, but rather, now there's something else that's necessary. When you're in a corrupted form, we are now have been reduced to a totally different state. And that is, as he points out, we are now in a matzeh, dahainu, i.e., which is the form that they are presently in. Now, after the chet, we are now in a corrupted form, and that is shebo nisrabe hora. Evil has now been intensified. That is now what took place after the chet of Adam Rishon, being that it had been. So now it comes out the actual damage. Ramchal is trying to explain the actual damage that was caused to Adam and the world by his sinning, which means the increase of evil, right, within man and the world. And he goes on to explain. So what's the Eitzah? So what advice does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have for the world? So therefore it becomes absolutely necessary for both. Who are the both? Mankind and the world. You have to undergo a total transformation. You have to undergo, in the present state that it is, man will never be able to pull himself up. The world will also not be able to pull itself back to even to a high, pristine state. So Elistarach Lahem, so it becomes necessary, Behechrich means necessary, Avoyer Ma'avar Hefsid, which means we have to pass through a stage of decay. We have to pass through a stage of decay, which means that being that now evil is already mixed, evil now is intermingled with the man and the world, right? So evil has to now be removed. How is it going to be removed? Through a process of decay. If man becomes decayed, i.e., death has now come to the world. That's man. but not just man. The world also, as you'll soon see in Ramchal, will also have to undergo a process of decay, and now there'll be a new, he says, restoration, both of man and the world. Go to Ramchal. Because the way it's now in its corrupted form, the only way is that it has to pass Mavar HaHefsid. That it has to pass a stage of decay, which is the Hainu, Misa L'Odom. We're talking about Misa. For man, it means Misa. Right? Which, quite simply, again, if not for Misa, if not for man having to die, it's simply not possible. Any man, in other words, any man that's born after the sin of Adam Rishon, any man, which is all of us, the whole world coming from Adam Rishon, any person that was born after the Chet of Adam Rishon is not able to perceive or to achieve perfection in its current state. It's not shaykh, it's not possible. So therefore, what you have to undergo is a whole process of decay. By hefsed, and that decay is not only for man, but the hefsed l'chol shal ha-hoivim sheniskal kolo imoy, all other existing things. Hoivim means existing. They have to undergo a total transformation. Have to undergo a complete transformation of decay of all existing things that were corrupted together with other Mauritian. So in the next paragraph, Ramchal will tell us that the world as we know it, the world as we know it is no longer suited. The world as we know it is no longer suited to support the eternal schar that awaits man. So therefore Ramchal will soon see in the next paragraph that the world also became so damaged that the world also has to undergo a process of death. We'll soon see. The world also, not only man, but the world also will have to undergo a process of death in order to be able to restore itself to its original state, man also. And, says Ramchal further, it means that in its present state, the neshama is unable to purify the body. The neshama is incapable. The neshama is incapable of purifying the body. Elo, acha. You know what it's capable? The first step is separation. The neshama has to leave the body. The body is going to be left to decay. Elo, acha, sheteitze mimeno tchila. Only after the neshama first leaves the body, the yomus haguf, the yiposed. The body dies and it decomposes. That's what's going to have to happen. The body dies, yomus haguf, the yiposeit, and it decomposes. So the body decomposes. The shama, on the other hand, it still functions. The shama still functions fully, as we're going to point out soon, the Ramchal. What happens is, we talk about death, talk about the guf. The guf dies and decomposes. And after that, what comes the next kufa? What comes the next kufa? Then comes the kufa of tchiyas ha-meisim. Resurrection. So va'oz yachzor v'yibone binyan chodosh. Now after that comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the body will return and be reconstructed. The body, which means again what Ramchal is saying, that is through the experience of the grave. Through the experience of the grave, the body becomes cleansed of all the deficiencies that was added to it as a result of the chait of Adam Rishon, and now that the body has been totally cleansed, it can now be reconstructed just as the body of Adam Rishon was before the chait. That will happen after Tchis HaMesim. That's what's going to accomplish. That's what's going to be achieved. V'tikonas boya neshoma, now the neshoma will re-enter, v'tizachcheu, and purify it. We'll purify this goof. So it very seems quite simple. So it means that when we learn Chumash and we look upon when Hashem says to Adam Rishon, because you ate from the Eitz Hadas, right? Therefore you're going to die. So we look at it as simply as punishment. From Chal, it's not simply punishment. It's not an arbitrary punishment. But it was a necessity to allow man to return to his original state. That we find out something new. It wasn't plain just punishment. That wasn't just punishment. It was an arbitrary punishment. That had to be a process. It's a process that had to allow man to be able to come back to the original state, because only then, if he comes back to his original state, is he ready to receive the intended, right, benefits that Hashem is ready to reward and give the man. So again, so this is how Ramchal basically tells us how the process works. Okay, till now we were talking about that's how man cleanses himself. In other words, man has to undergo, as we said, that process. Man has to undergo the process where the body decomposes and has to be reconstructed. But you also mentioned the world also. Because the world also, after the Chet of Adam Rishon, also had a Yerida. It's in a corrupt form. Kalnad Ramchal and says, V'chein ha'olam kuloi. There will come a time. There will come a time, says the Ramchal, where, because Ramchal now explains also the change that occurred to the world. It's not just a change that occurred to man, but also a change that occurred to the world. So V'chein ha'olam kuloi. Yischarev will become destroyed mitzurosa shalata from its present form. There'll come a time that the world will cease to exist from its present form. However, the Yoshu v'yubone, it will be brought back and built b'tzurach heres, in another form. What kind of form? Re'uya l'shleimus, in another form that is befitting to be in a state of perfection. That'll be, as we call it, the new world. Ramchal here is pointing out, which quite simply, the physical world was always a physical world, but the physical world became even more physical and deficient as a result of the Chet of Adam Rishon. So the physical world, after the Chet of Adam Rishon, became more material, became more deficient, and therefore the world after the Chet of Adam Rishon can no longer be a venue. The world can no longer be a venue for man to be able to receive his reward of spirituality. And therefore, the world also has to be recreated in a more spiritual form. The world has to be recreated in a spiritual form. So we find out here, as we see here, as Ramchal goes on, and he brings sources for this. So Val Cain. So therefore, again, Nigza al Ho'odom Shiyomus Viyaz Vichir. Therefore, first of all, it was decreed upon man that man should die and then he lives again. Right? So that's one outcome. Remember, Michal said this is the Midas Adin. That's one outcome of the attribute of justice, right? Which Michal introduced. In other words, justice demands that damage done to man cannot be ignored. Justice demands that damage done to man cannot be ignored. So the first part of it, that was decreed upon man, that he dies and then he lives again. He died and he lives again. The Huinyan Tchis HaMeisim. That is what we know that is called Tchis HaMeisim. That's the concept of resurrection of the dead. There will come a time that those who have died will be resurrected and will become alive again. And interesting thing about this, Ramchal again will talk about it. Val ha'olam, and also regarding the world, was also decreed a gzeirah on the world, sheyichorev, that the world also be destroyed from its present state, the yagzor v'yichudash, and it will be brought back, and it will be renewed. So Ma'alut Ramchal is telling us that the Midas Adin therefore demands not only a man. Midas Adin also demands as well that the world be destroyed. Why? To remove all vestiges of evil. When the world becomes destroyed, so now all vestiges are removed, that only then can the world be remade to be an appropriate place for man to receive his eternal reward. Who in Yemashi Omru, so says Ramchal. What I'm telling you now, this is basically what Chazal referred to. You see, now he's referring to the sources where I'm getting it at. Says Ramchal, where am I taking this from? So I didn't make it up. He's what I'm telling you is, this is really what Chazal tell us really in the Gemara. The Gemara is actually himself is Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Aleph. That's Ramchal. But the Gemara tells us that Shit Alfei Shona Havealme, that the world exists for 6,000 years. Right? World exists for 6,000 years, the Chad Chorif, and one millennium it will be destroyed, which means in the seventh millennium, the seventh thousand. So now it's the Chad Chorif, for one millennium it will be destroyed. Now, we have to understand also, that Gemara, that Ramchal really is telling us what's happening, the destruction, what we're saying, that the world will be destroyed for 1,000 years, and then again will be renewed. after the seventh year, the 7,000, that 7,000 will be renewed again. That destruction should not be taken as a negative, event for humanity, just on the opposite. Because when it comes a time when the physical world as we know it is no longer in existence, so mankind will now be elevated in preparation for his eternal world in Olam Haba. By the way, Olam Haba, according to Ramchal, means the renewed world after the world will become destroyed in the seventh millennium. So 6,000 years will stand. We're now 5773, right? Then comes the seventh millennium, the 7,000. After that, the world is renewed. That's called Olam Haba. That's called Olam Haba. And then anyway, he says, in that kufa, man will be able to receive his eternal reward. Goes on Ramchal. This is how he explains it. And he says, Ulesoif Elef Shono. At the end, he says, of the seventh millennium, which is the 7,000, Kodesh Baruch Hu Chayzer Umechadish Yisolomoy. Kodesh Baruch Hu will return, and he's going to renew his world. Kodesh Baruch Hu will renew his world, and he says, this renewed world, which is Olam Haba, will be perfected. This renewed world, where Olam Haba will be perfected, and, said Ramchal, Based upon this, now we come out to a concept, there'll be a new world. This new world will be called Olam Haba. What will be the benefits of this new world? V'hine, so now says Ramchal, l'fi shayrish zeh, according to this principle, zman ha-gimul ha-miti, the time to be truly rewarded, the time for true compensation, right? The time for true compensation, which means, i.e., Dein Zman Kibul Aschar Shezachan Olamala, the actual time that man will be able to receive the reward, his eternal reward that we mentioned already above, the time and the place of Mekoymoy, who Acharat Chir, will be after resurrection. After Tchir Samesim, points out to Ramchal, Be'olam, in a new world, Be'olam Shezchadish, in a world that will be renewed, and that is called Olam Haba. When that time comes, Odom Yehonoboy Begufoy Benishmosoy, in this new world, man will benefit there in both body and soul. His body will be in a hand, will have Hanor. His body will benefit, his neshama will benefit, because being that Olam Haba will be, right, being that Olam Haba, which is the place for eternal reward, will be created after man has been resurrected. So the new world will come after Tchiyas HaMeisim. After man, that means that the entire person, body and soul, will receive reward in Olam Haba. Because at that time his body will be purified through his neshama. His body will be so purified, his neshama, umuchen al yodo, and it will be prepared, the guf will be prepared through the koyach of the neshama, liyos nehane betoy vahu, to be able to benefit from all that spiritual good. In that Olam Haba, in that renewed world, that will be after the seventh millennium, comes in the world. However, guess what? The reward in that new world, says Ramchal, will not be the same for everyone. In other words, even all those people that will be resurrected, all those people that will get up on Tchiyas HaMeisim, right? And all those people who will get up Tchiyas HaMeisim and they will be in this new world, but the benefits of how much you could receive in this new world will not be the same. It all depends on your avodah, what you prepared while you were alive before you died. This comes on Ramchal to say. So at the Tchiyas HaMeisim, yes, to avoid Tchiyas HaMeisim, everybody, those that will be zeichet to be resurrected, and you'll be coming into the new world to be able, ready to receive the eternal reward, but the eternal reward will not be, the quality of that eternal reward will not be the same. It'll be tremendous, but it's not the same for everyone. That's what Ramchal basically is trying to explain, that Olam Haba, this new world, will not be the same for everyone. And therefore he said the following, people will be examined there when it comes in the world, right? So now you have all the resurrected people, alright, so now they're coming here, so they're going to be examined, and their level and their status will vary. It's not going to be the same. Tischalef, all the people that are going to be existing at that time, their madrega and their status will vary. It will be tischalef, it will not be the same. What it means to say is that each person will exist in this new world at a level specifically measured for him. That's what I'm calling. No free ride. Nothing is free. This world is not free either. Next will certainly not. So Ramchal is telling us that each person which will be existing there in that new world will be existing at a level specifically measured for him relative to the effort that he put in while he was in this world. So to benefit from the new world, it all depends according to how much effort he put in this world. And each level, each different level, carries with it a tremendous divine pleasure, right? That a person will derive relative to the level that designated for him. That's what Ramchal basically is saying in the next few lines over here. This is what it is. Not the same for everybody. You have to realize, as he says, Tischalit madregosu mamalosom. Their level and their stature will vary. According to what? According to what will it vary? Kifi hashir. Right? According to the extent, mashutochu ba'olam havoida. The extent that they exerted themselves in the avodas Hashem, he says, in this world, ukifima, and according, shishtadlu lahasig min hashleimus, and based upon their endeavor to attain some level of perfection. In other words, Ramchal basically saying, and that's something we'll see on the sheet soon, which gives us a lot of chizuk. Ramchal is saying that the level, determining, you know, how do you measure? The level and stature of Abba will depend not only on how many mitzvahs you're doing, right? Not only how many mitzvahs you're doing, but also on the exertion and effort you expended. Sometimes you put in a lot of effort, but didn't achieve too much. Happens all the time. We try so hard, for whatever reason, we don't succeed. That effort that you put in Shemaim is very, very choshev. And therefore, what determines the level of how much one schar gets is not only how many mitzvahs you do, but also how much effort you put in. Which means that two people can do the exact same mitzvah, and in Olam Haba we'll find out one person is getting so much more schar than the other. Why? Because for one it came in much more difficult. One had a bumpy road. One had to overcome different challenges. So two people are doing the exact same mitzvah, and yet the schar is not going to be the same. Actually, Chazal said, no, it's from tzara agra. According to how much tzara, right? According to how much pain, to how much sacrifice it demands from you. So you gave all that much more. Even though the end result was not more. But to get there, the effort that you exerted yourself, that's tremendously, in Shemayim, they really accounts for a lot. And that's what Ramchal is telling you. Kimashi ishtadlu, is what Ramchal is saying. That in Shemayim, when it comes to the next world, this new world, to receive schar, it's also determined mashi ishtadlu. It means that which you are mishtadlu, that which you tried. Right? Lahasig ben ashlemis. You're mishtadlu. You put in your koyach, you put in your effort. Ki kifi hashir hazeh. In other words, relative to the amount of exertion and pursuing, right, all that, he says, according to that, all of that, he says, tis dayo ha-neshoma b'yatzmo, the neshoma will shine, all that more, v'toy b'guf, and illuminate, the neshoma will illuminate your guf, the body, v'tizakeyu, and it will purify it, illuminate it, and purify it. And both together, the soul and the body, will both acquire nobility and mila and elevated stature. Quite simply, very important, very important. Someone who is born with minimal capabilities, right? Today they have titles for everything, ACD, all these different things, whatever it is. People are born handicapped physically, sometimes a little bit mentally, whatever it is. People who are born with minimal capabilities, right? Or let's say people happen to be living in an era that's not blessed with role models. I didn't have anybody to learn from. Something like in this generation. So people, let's say, are born with minimal capabilities, or you're living in an era right, that does not have very many role models, and you don't have support systems, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu does not expect you to accomplish as much as a genius would accomplish. Kadosh Baruch Hu only asks from you to be what you can be. That's all Hashem asks from you. And you will get the same schar, the same reward as that genius, right? It was because of his genius, ingenuity, he was able to accomplish, to achieve so much more. If you achieve with your minimal capabilities, what you're able to achieve, your schar is as much as it is, sometimes even more, because maybe you had to overcome greater difficulties to do it. So if a person exerts himself as much as possible to achieve what he can based on his own circumstances, he'll be on a higher level in Olam Haba than someone who's born at the time of the Beis Hamikdash. Someone who's born in the year of the Beis Hamikdash, it's quite easy to be a tzaddik. So you have somebody who's born at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, and he's a great, great tzaddik. And somebody's born, let's say, in a time like today, says mitzvahs and matzim toivim are much less. However, this may be more choshev than the great tzaddik who lived at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, because a person will be judged according to his circumstances, according to his ishtadlus, according to his effort, according to his nisyonis. That's what will determine, he says. The yeruim liskarev, and therefore they will be worthy. So we worthy, he says, to come closer El Odoim Baruch Hu, to come closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu, to lay upon us and to bask in the light of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's countenance, to be honest and to be zeichet, to benefit B'tuba Amiti and Hashem's true goodness. So B'kitzer, so this is what we have, a little bit of the picture that Muhammad is telling us about what's called Olam Haba. Olam Haba, this Gan Eden is another thing, which we'll talk about, as you'll see, in the next year. But Olam Haba, Ramchal says, is also a phrase, this earthly world, but in the new world to come, after this world as we know it will cease to exist for one millennium, and then comes the new world, the Olam Haba. And the people of Chisa Mason will be living in this new world, and be ready to receive their eternal reward, but based upon how much they exerted themselves while they were living in this world. And that will determine what their Olam Haba will look like. So let's take a look a little bit on the sheet, and we'll see a little bit more about these principles. First of all, something very fascinating. Let's take an item of Limud HaTorah. Let's take an item of Limud HaTorah. It's a sefer called Chelik L'Olam Haba. It's a pirush on Masechtas Avos. The Mechaber is Reb Shaul Brach, who is a Rav in Kasho. He's a Talmud of the Ramshik, he was. The Ramshik was a Talmud of Chassam Sofer. Everybody may be aware, but you don't remember the details. Everybody knows that in the last Perek Shishi of Masechtas Avos, it gives us a list of Memches Devorim Shatoyu Niktas Ben, the 48 things that a person needs, right, in order to be Kohen HaTorah. It's 48 things. You want to be Zoichet the Kinyan HaTorah, it's Memches Devorim. It says 48 things. 48 things in order, right, to be Zoichet HaTorah. And one of the things is a very peculiar thing. It seems you can't begin without it. One of the 48 conditions is you have to learn. Is that a condition? I mean, the conditions is after you're learning, if you want to be Matzliach, there should be 48 things. How is learning a condition? Without learning is nothing. If you're learning, you need 48. For example, someone wants to learn how to drive. So tell them, well, the first thing is you have to have a car. That's bullshit. To learn how to drive is after you have the car. Telling someone you need a car, in order to drive you need a car, that's bullshit. That's not part of any condition of driving. If you have a car, now you have to teach you how to use the car. So of course we're talking about when you're learning already, and yet the Mishnah says, Ve'elohen b'talmud. One of the 48 conditions is learning. Learning is not a condition. That's the essence. On top of learning, now you need conditions to be matzliach, to be successful. What does it mean? So he says the following. Listen to what he says over here. The Talmud, one of the 48 things is learning. So Makshim, the Mephoshim, asks Pshita. It's Pshita like that. Shimei Meloimed, because if he's not learning, it's Pshita if you're not learning that the Torah is not going to be nicked, he's not going to acquire Torah. If he's not learning, how are you going to get it? You're telling someone, you know, if you want to succeed in business, you have to do business. Is that a condition? Of course, if you're not going to do business, if you do business, now you need advice how to be a Matzliach in business. But you don't have to tell them you have to do business. Shteitzer. You have to tell somebody to learn. What do you mean that? What kind of a condition? This is not part of a condition. This is the essence. Yesh Leimer. He points out the following. You know what the Mishnah means, that there's a condition about learning. He said, the Mishnah Limud HaTorah, he says, Melimud Kol Chochma Shebi'Elam. Any other discipline that you want to study, listen to this. Any other discipline, I don't care if it's mathematics or it's philosophy or it's medicine, any other discipline that you want to study, as much as you put in, right, that's as much as you're going to gain. In other words, you put in 5 hours, you'll get 5 hours worth of knowledge. You put in 2 hours, you only get 2 hours worth of knowledge. Any other discipline, right, you're going to only acquire as much knowledge as the time as you put in, but not by Torah. Torah doesn't go by how much time you put in. It goes upon how much you're able to put in. It hasn't got to do at the end of the day counting the hours. Listen to what he says. Because Torah is Hashem's Chochmah. Torah is not man-made Chochmah. Torah is Chochmah that comes from Kodesh Baruch Hu, and therefore, Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one that is Mashpia. He is the one that basically plants the Chochmah in our minds and gives us the Siyata Dishmaya to be able to be served in the Torah. Listen. It says a tremendous thing over here. The Mishnah Limud HaTorah, Limud HaTorah is different than Limud Kol Chochmah Shebe'elam. Limud HaTorah is different than all Chochmahs. Shegam Imasim. Look what he says. This part of it is a little difficult to take. He says you have a Masim, let's say he was learning 9 hours a day. sits in koil, he's learning hours a day. If he was able to learn 10 hours and he only learned 9 hours, he's not going to be matzliach fully. Why? He's learning 9 hours. But guess what? But you were able to learn 10. On the other hand, let's say somebody's working. Not all Rosh Yeshivas like to hear this. But somebody's working and he only has 2 hours a day to learn. In those 2 hours, he can accomplish more than the ones learning 9 hours. Why? Because the person who's learning 2 hours is learning all the time that I only have 2 hours. So I'm learning all the time that I have. The person might be learning 9 hours, but he could have learned more. So now when it comes to secular studies, if you put in 9 hours, you get 9 hours worth of information. You could have learned 10, okay, but you learned 9. But Torah is not like that. Torah is Chochmah, Hashem is Hashem's Chochmah. And Hashem gives it to the one who's fully dedicated to learning. Let's take a look. If someone is, let's say, is Masmid Lilmud Becholze, Imhoye Lilmud. Right? This is the way it goes. Nevertheless, if he had the ability to learn more, Torah says, I have nothing with you. If one is Torah in Parnosa, the Eimer Panai does not have time, only 1 hour. Oz. If he really is careful about that hour, not to waste a moment. Let's say he pushes himself, you know what? I'm going to try to find an extra hour. So now he's going beyond. So he's only learning 2 hours, right? But that's all he has. Or he did more than he's able to. And then you have another person. Here you have a person who only has time to learn an hour, but he's learning that hour. Somebody else has time to learn 10 hours, right? But only 9 hours. Yasig horishin b'teira yosem min hasheni. The first one will be masig, will acquire more than the second. Why? Ki raki matera yekora ma'oid be'enov. To be zorch, the Torah has to be precious to you. Torah precious to you means that you give it all that you can. If it's only an hour, but you give all that you can. So only the Torah is precious to you. Oz, Miss Gallus, if the Torah wants to reveal itself to you. Ki adiyas ha-Torah is gula matnas Hashem. It's a matone. It's not something that you gain physically or by intellectual exercise alone. Li'ireyav, to those who are Yerushamayim. That's how you zuch the Torah. L'chei nitna, therefore the Torah was given l'misha yikora be'enov v'sameachima. That's what the Mishnah means. The Talmud means it's not enough you learn 10 hours or 8 hours. Talmud means learn as much as you can. That's the condition. Somebody say, I learned 5 hours. You could have learned maybe more. It's not good enough. The Talmud, you have to dedicate fully to your learning. The Zukavon is Talmud. That's what the Mishnah means, Talmud. But other Chokhmah, any other Chokhmah that you learn, if you put in 8 hours, you're going to gain for the 8 hours. Even though you could have put in 10 hours, but you're going to gain benefit from the 8 hours. But Torah is not like that. But Torah is really to gain from Torah, because Torah is Chochmah Hashem. Torah is a totally different Chochmah. Now the Rav Tam, one of the shmuzim that he gave in the Yeshiva in Torah Vadas, so he describes, he says, when something we might have mentioned in the past, that the Chazanish, originally, the world didn't know the God of the Chazanish. One of the first who actually became very close to the Chazanish was Reb Chaim Oizer, who recognized the God of the Chazanish. But in the beginning, when the Chazanish met Reb Chaim Oizer for the first time, Chaim Oizer didn't know the godless because the Chazanish, he concealed his godless. Behalten, he was the wife and tznu. As a matter of fact, when the Chazanish came, first Chazanish came at Masechet Zevachim, the title page was without a name. No one knew. So a great Nishe Sefer came out. Nobody knew who it was. And a matter of fact, that Rabbi Itzel Ponovich, one of the great Rosh Yeshivas, and was a great barking Kachim, when the Sefer came out, he starts looks into the Sefer, and he knew Kachim, looks into the Sefer and says, I need a Gemara, I have to go through the Sugi again. Bring a Gemara. Chazanish. So, Rabbi Chaim Oizer meets the Chazanish for the very first time, so he asked him, what is your profession? What are you doing? What do you do? The Chazanish says, I help out my wife in the store. It's true. His wife is Chofetz Chaim also. So I help out my wife in the store. Which he did at the time. He didn't say how many hours, but he helped out his wife in the store. And Reb Chaim Oizer said, he didn't know who he was. So Reb Chaim says, and what about learning? And the Chazanish says, when I have time, I learn. This was his lashon. This is his time. Rapam pointed out, he says, that answer that Chazon Ish gave, that's the Hagdor, that's exactly the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. This of Limud HaTorah doesn't go by hours, it goes when you have time, you learn. That's it is. Some people have a lot of time, right? But they learn much less. Even they're learning a lot of hours, but they could have maybe more time. But the Chazon Ish said, when I have time, I learn. He actually defined what the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is. That's what the mitzvah is. It doesn't go by hours. It goes when you have time, you learn. That's the Yisoy. And that's really what Ramchal was telling us. Lost Lova, it doesn't go by quantity, it goes how much effort, how much you exerted, how much the ishtadlus, how much koyach you put in, what it costs you. That at the end, that's what the tally, that's what they add up when it comes down to the inyan of schar. Time is moving on, so I want to show you something which Ramosha says in Dorosh Moshe, look number three. Number three. We find the Torah many times. We find this is in Parshas Vayera. The Torah says, "Who Aharon Moshe?" This is Aharon Moshe, of course, right? Who were involved in taking out the Yidden out of Mitzrayim? Sometimes we find that the Torah Aharon before Moshe, and sometimes we find Moshe Rabbeinu's name before Aharon. So, what does Rashi say? Let's take a look. Who Aharon Moshe? Perish Rashi. Rashi says, "Yesh Mekayim." There are some places. Shemagdim Aharon LaMoshe. Yesh Mekayim Shemagdim Moshe LaAharon. Loimar Sheshkulim Kechav. They are equal. That's where the Torah interchanges. Sometimes Moshe Rabbeinu's name is mentioned before Aharon, and sometimes Aharon's name in the Torah. The Torah they were equal. So Moshe Feinstein asked the Moshe Kanji, is it really equal? Wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu greater? He's the greatest Novi. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, there's never going to be another Novi, not before nor after, like Moshe Rabbeinu. How can you say that Aharon and Moshe were equal? How can they were equal? Aharon was very, very great. But how can you say it was equal to Moshe Rabbeinu? So he asked the question, a simple question. He says, "Who Dovah Tamur?" Rav Moshe asked, and Sefer Dorosh Moshe. He says, Rashi, he says, it's something that it needs to be explained. She Moshe, or your Olin Hanavi, Moshe was the master of all the prophets. The Rabbon Shokol Oilam, he's the Rebbe of the entire world. Vayodin Nitzu Torah. Moshe was the one through whom the Torah was given. Veich Omer Shahar and Shokol. What are Moshe answers? Moshe answers. He says, godless greatness is not defined by adding up how many blood gemara you know, or how many mitzvahs you naturally do. Godless is that if you, with your weak koiches, if you accomplish all, right, they are able to accomplish, they are just as great as somebody maybe who had more wherewithal, right, somebody had more resource accomplished more. Because the other person also only accomplished that what his potential was. So if you have somebody that is greater and somebody who is not as great, but each one accomplishes full potential, then you're equally great. Aharon HaKohen accomplished everything what he was able to accomplish, reaching his highest potential possible. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do any more. Moshe Rabbeinu was greater, but he had more potential. But at the end of the day, Moshe only did what his potential allowed him to. Aharon HaKohen did the same thing. And that's why Shlem Shekulim in. That's how you reckon the godless. The Kiv and the Aharon also called Yom HaBishlemus. Being that Aharon, his entire life, when he did everything fully and completely, you know, he completed his mission in this world, called Yom HaBishlemus, called Rotsan Hashem Yisbor, show you actually losses. He did whatever possible. Who shakul kemoshe. After Moshe, you go, even though Moshe, let's say, would be greater, because of Lachain, all of the Yosef Devon. Then we find Moshe Rabbeinu, right? More things are written about Moshe. But Komokoyim, Kim, the bottom line is, both only did what their potential allowed them to do. So they're equally great. You can't say one's greater than the other. Mekomukim kim shishneim also mashin itztavu v'nishlechu kefi yecholtam. Everyone did what they were supposed to do. Each one fulfilled their mission on this world according to what they were supposed to. Hein shovim b'malah. In the eyes of Hashem, they're just as great. As we pointed out just a moment ago, sometimes it goes even more. That someone, as we said, someone in this generation, right, who has less mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim than someone who's born in the year of the Beis Hamikdash, but for you it was more difficult to reach your small madrega, that can be sometimes even more choshev. So at the end of the day, that's what he points out, that Shokol Moshe Kaharin, they're equal. So I want to show you, Rabbi Yisrael, in a few morning moments, there's a very interesting little story, but we have it here in print with Rav Gifter. With Rav Gifter. Just I want to mention this famous word, just I'll say Balpeh first before I get to that, which is a famous Chofetz Chaim, doesn't exist, I believe, somewhere in Mashgiach or in any yeshiva, or sometime, everybody, you go through yeshivas, I had to hear this, because everyone has the opportunity to repeat in the name of the Chofetz Chaim. It's been reprinted many in places. It's the Chofetz Chaim Ala Torah, it's also in the Chofetz Chaim Mishnais and Masechta Sovis, and so on and so forth, and then it's brought down by so many different Sifrei Musa, Heintige Mashgiachim, and so on and so forth. But we say, that when you've completed Masechta, what do we say? We say at the end, we say that Onu Amelim, we mark the distinction between us, who have the schus, the privilege of learning Torah, right, and the secular world out there. Onu Amelim, we toil here in this world, right, and they toil, the Hema Amelim. We labor and they labor. But what do we add to that? We labor and we receive reward, Mekablim Schar. The Hema Amelim, they labor and toil for not. So the question is, what do you mean? A person who's a tailor, right, and he sews a suit, doesn't he get paid for a suit? A person who's a shoemaker, makes it, he also gets paid. The secular world, when they toil, don't you get paid? The person who's in construction, he builds a house, of course he gets paid. So you mean we toil and they toil? We toil and we get reward. They toil and they don't get reward. Chos Chaim's famous words are that if someone hires a tailor, right, to sew him a suit, and the tailor puts in, let's say, 2 weeks of hard work, but for some reason wasn't able to finish, he's not going to get paid a cent. What about the fact is that I put in 2 weeks of work? Hey, what do I care how much work you put in? I need the end result. I need the product. A builder, right, who builds for 6 months, but for some reason couldn't finish the job, they're going to get paid. I need the house. What about the 6 months that he put in all the effort? He's not going to get paid. You commission someone like to make you a new pair of shoes, right? So he starts and he starts the fashion to mold a pair of shoes. And he puts in a week's work. For some reason he couldn't finish it. Customer's not going to pay him. I want my shoes. What about the week of work? No. When it comes to Torah, sometimes people learn, or you're pursuing to do mitzvahs. For some reason you didn't achieve. Kosh Baruch Hu pays you for the effort. Kosh Baruch Hu does not look at the results. We toil and they toil. We get paid for the toil itself, even without the end result. They don't. They only get paid. If you produce, you get paid. If you didn't produce, you don't. That's the difference. Any koich, any shtadlus you do, and sometimes you do for mitzvah. Yeah, sometimes you go for chlas eskala. Sometimes you go, you know, you're not so much liach. You made a few phone calls, right? So it didn't go. But you know what? You made 5 phone calls. You put in your shtadlus, you get gewaldige schar for that. You say at the end, you know, you feel very bad. You say, no, I was not masliach, I wasn't successful. Or somebody's trying to raise money for yeshiva, whatever the situation is. Yeah, people are not giving. Yeah, you tried. Yeah. You get schar for that. Because the koich and the effort that you put in, because Bogot doesn't go dafke, but we don't look at the results. We look in at the shtalas, at the try, the effort, and the exertion you put in. And that's the difference between us, that's what we say in the tefillah, and between them. We get paid for all the koich that we put in. It's not, nothing gets lost. Everything is recorded in your mind. So now let's go. We're put over here. Rav Gifter, listen to this. I brought down a sefer called Darkei Shel Torah. Chelik Aleph. Rav Gifter said like this. Rav Gifter Rosh Yeshiva Fels once tried to raise money for the yeshiva, for Tells the Yeshiva. So he had an appointment with a gevir. Listen to the story. So Pam, he says, Noideli al gevir godol shasokov mistafim. I found out of a great gevir, a big usher, that had businesses, you know, that was connected all over the place, all over the world. This person had business connections all over the world. B'chol merchavi olam u'merkazom b'Mexico. Seems to be that his central place was in Mexico. That was his headquarters. Headquarters of the business was in Mexico. U'bikashti li'pogishimoy. And I wanted to meet him. Push it. Raise money for the yeshiva. Kedei lahatrimoy, to get him to contribute avur yeshiva's tells. Halo, the person hoyotorid basokov. He's very busy. Bishas laila, he only came home late at night. Such a busy, very, very busy businessman, computer. Bishas laila mucheres late, shav lebesoy. And guess what? He comes home late and he leaves the house before dawn. So how much already is in his house? Right? He comes home late and he leaves before dawn. Ubeterim heir ha-shachar, right? Even before, alois ha-shachar, before dawn, hishkim le-misrael, he goes to his office. So now when am I going to meet him? So Belez Breve, Mikva Benenu, he says, so we made an appointment, Begisha Belishchosoy, in his office. Kesser, we're going to meet in his office. Arrange an appointment to meet him in his office. When? Very early in the morning. Bishas Boike Mugdemis, very early hour. Boisayoyim, no, that time we have gift to says, we have to daven bashkome. You have an early appointment. Can't daven late, can't daven bashkome. So Boisayoyim, he says, Palalma bashkome. He said, Venasano, we travel to Misrodoi, Bisho Hayuda. In the appointed time, we come to the office. Ram, however, he says, finally, we got up early, we daven bashkome. He says, Kashu Higano, Misrodoi, when we came to the office. Nizba, we came a little late. Came a little late. Shecharnu Samoyed, we came late. Hagvir hoyibitzumo shosiches telephone. He was mamish busy on some business call. He was on the telephone. The gevir, But the Alonu, when he let us know, he has a lot of tzar. He says, I'm sorry, he says. So Yuchel Ripogash, I can't meet you now. I can't meet you. Because a very important phone call, he says, Hakashuva in Paris, he's talking to. Okay. So he's talking out there, out of the country, very important business call, I can't meet you. Kashi Saim Lissacher, the telephone. So after he finished speaking on the phone, Omar Tiloy says, Rav Gifta, you know what? I'm not here for a contribution. I don't want any contribution, but I want to ask you a question. Rav Gifta said, change my mind. I'm not asking for contribution. Omar Tiloy Sheini Roysa Latrimoy. Ach Britsoini Hatzik Befon of Sheila. I have to ask a question. The Kach Shelosi, and this is my question. Reisa Bezcha, I saw your beautiful house. First man lived in a mansion. I saw his Beis Chaim Mefoyer B'Shchuna Yehudis in the Jewish section. Saw your beautiful house. Ach B'Soyin Yerush, I want to ask you, what time do you come home at night to your house? Be'ez Eshoa to Magia LeBeis Chaim Balaylo. U'Be'ez Eshoa, and what time do you leave your house with Nes Boicher? I want to ask you a question. How late do you come home and how early do you leave? Halo HaShiveni, the person answered me, Shukhoiz LeBeis, he comes home B'Shoa Achas says 11 o'clock at night. This big mansion that he has, he comes on 11 o'clock at night. The oizer, and he leaves already 5 in the morning. The oizer b'shochomesh, him shachti l'shul, I continue to ask him the next question. Vim Cain, why do you need this beautiful house for? You're over there! Why do you need this beautiful house for? You're not there to enjoy it. He says, lo malocho bayis mefoyer kol kach, kim shein choroya oizer koliker. By the way, he doesn't even see it, you know, it's always there at night. Because when he comes home, it's night, he leaves before it's morning. He can't even see his house, he says. He can't even see it, he says. You're not there, he says. But Zoschol Abeischol Kvachoshuch. When you come home, it's already dark. When you leave the house, it's still dark. Right? So he says, the beautiful house is not for me, it's for my wife and kids. That was his answer. Shein abayis amefor avuroi el avur ishto bnei beisoi. Ki hu be'atzmoi be'emes torud basokim. I'm talking busy with my business. Kashiro, when the Gevir saw him, that I just can't believe, that I can't believe this man's lifestyle, the Gevir, he explained something to me. Listen what the Gevir said. Omali bezeloshim. Tedoche Rebbe. Rebbe, I want you to know. Shimroitzu matzliach be'esik, if you want to be matzliach in a business, tzrichim liyashkuim, then you have to be in it completely. In other words, if you're going to be matzliach in business, you can't do it haphazard. That malim neganse kop in business. That's why he says, most of the day, that's where my head is. Rav Gifta said, and I found that in Upshat, La'asoyik B'divri Torah. When it comes to Torah, I feel like an asset, like a business. Just like the Gevir just taught me now, if you want to be a Masliach in business, then you have to have your ganze kof has to be in it, right? Not block out anything else. When it comes to Torah, Torah is also an asset, the business of Torah. La'asoyik B'divri Torah. That you can be Masliach in Torah. That's it.